You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets. I'm here to talk about a crazy episode, episode number 3. The season continues on in fine fashion. So to do that, I have a very good panel, as always, today. First, please welcome the person who used to be the Jacques to my Ting Ting, but now who's the person I'm kind of blaming for whatever went down. It's Mike Bloom. Mike, what's up? And also, what the hell?
This is what happened, Shannon, when you manifest things. You know, I think minute 2, we're all saying, wow, look at Shannon. She's put something out into the universe that's very good. And now we see what happens when you do so. We get some good and we get some bad. The Survivor universe is truly balanced now, thanks to your prognosticating.
Yeah, I thought I manifested it, but actually I cursed them is what it must have been. I think, you know, I was watching the episode after you because I wake up, time zones are weird, and I was texting you like, oh my God, Jacques and Ting Ting, did I do this? My mind, incredible. And then you had watched it, so you knew that it was just doom in front of me.
Yep, all I texted you back with was, you definitely did. And that was just, I just put my phone down and I just waited. And, you know, I'm glad I didn't hear your response to the episode until we're talking now, just to get your, you know, free base thoughts. But yeah, suffice it to say, I'm sure you were looking back on that message, you know, 55 minutes from then, thinking, wow, it's literally night and day on this episode.
Yeah, I was looking back thinking that's the last time I believe in anything and I'm just going to go back to being a pessimist. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. We do have a great guest to talk about this episode and this season. He was on last season of Survivor South Africa, one of our favorite seasons ever. And he was really flying the flag for the superfans on that season. Please welcome Tevin. Tevin, how are you?
Shannon, thanks so much. I'm good. And yourself? I mean, it's great to be here. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I'm mad at Mike, as I said. Are you as mad at Mike for this as I am?
You know, my condolences to you guys. I mean, I've been listening to the podcast and I know about your whole Ting Ting and Jacques thing.
I
really couldn't believe what happened. It was such a surprise for me. I couldn't believe it. But before we start discussing it, I just have to say thanks for having me on the show. And I just got to give some a recognition to the production team for Survivor South Africa. I mean, they're doing such a great job ever since last season. It's amazing what super fans can do once they take over a show. Survivor South Africa has really grown since last season. It's amazing to see what's coming next as well.
Yeah, well, I think it's also interesting in that, you know, the first couple of episodes, I know I had gone forward saying, well, Survivor South Africa Philippines was bananas. But I think we've more settled into a more of a conventional Survivor season. And I think what I've learned at this point is, I don't know, like, what's in the water with you South Africans, but for some reason, you're just liable to make all these crazy decisions, especially compared to some of the other Survivor players. And I'm loving it. I'm loving that now we have a go-to Survivor franchise for just absolutely chaotic, insane decisions.
Mike, the only South African you really are friends with, I think, is me. And you know I'm crazy. So that's you know, your understanding of South Africa.
It's something we've actually, I once discussed this with a friend, because watching Survivor while growing up, it's something you want to happen in your own country. So we always discuss, like, why isn't South Africa doing such a good job? And it's only because this team has are super fans. So they know what we expect from the show, and they know how to keep people in suspense. And I've always thought that South Africans are so different. And because of the wide diversity in South Africa, you're in for a treat in terms of culture clashes, racial clashes. The social politics in South Africa is so intriguing that it makes for good television no matter what. It doesn't matter what show it is. South African reality TV is always intriguing for some reason. And I think it's portrayed in these last two seasons.
Yeah,
especially last season.
Yeah, I mean, the production team, I totally agree. They're super fans. They are willing to take risks, but also listen to what people want, what people liked and didn't like. I love how in the community they are, like, to the point where I'm messaging with them and they really, really care about the super fan and the international super fan community's, you know, opinions on it. And that's just so great to have that back and forth with them. But Tevin, I'm so excited to have you on for a couple of reasons. The first reason is that you are someone who went on Survivor and won Biostrath as a reward. So later in the podcast, we are going to get all of the firsthand details about Biostrath, like what it even is, which is the first thing. I'm super pumped about that. But also, I feel like...
Well, let's also point out that according to Shannon, that was the first thing that we're excited about with you coming on to the podcast.
Yeah, the Biostrath.
Wow, Biostrath is the first thing she was so keen to talk about.
Like, have you met me? Like, loyalty is David Wright's brand, and this is becoming my brand. I'm really leaning into it. Kevin, no, there were other things secondary to the Biostrath, of course. You know, obviously you went on as like the one of the major super fans. I feel like you and Verna were huge super fans going into last season. So from that perspective and having played now, like, who are the characters that you are liking watching the season and seeing it play out?
Well, yeah, as you said, like, Verna and I had that connection from day one. We spoke about every past season, Australian Survivor, everything else. So when you get there and you see someone who's like a super fan as well, they're also a big threat immediately. This season, I mean, I like the cast. There's some people who stood out. Jacques obviously stood out from the beginning because Jacques is a super fan, and we know him because he does podcasts here in South Africa for Survivor South Africa. So going into it, I already knew he'd play a good strategic game. The paranoia obviously builds up as you play the game. That's something I actually wanted to bring up, because when you're a super fan, I sometimes feel it's a bit of a hindrance in your game, because you get onto the island and you tend to overthink everything. You sort of paranoid from the beginning. There's never a point where you sit on the island and you're not thinking about the game strategically. I mean, you have hours during the day to do nothing, and yet you're still constantly thinking up some sort of strategy. Well, at least I was. And you can see with what Jacques did. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I completely agree. And what I really loved about Jacques' arc so far, his Jark, if you will, is that, you know, I'm trying something here. That's the super fan in me.
Yeah.
So the thing about being a super fan on Survivor, at least from what we've experienced on the American version, is that, to your point, Tevin, it really cuts both ways. Using some more recent examples, you can be an Adam Klein, who uses his knowledge of the show to rise to a position of ascension. Or you could be a Jacob Derwin, who drives himself and everyone else loco around him by just being super paranoid and thinking so much through scenarios. And the interesting thing about someone like Jacques is that through three episodes, we've now seen both.
Yeah,
we have commended the moves he's made in the first two episodes by, you know, using his knowledge to say, I know that that's going to be an advantage. I know how to manipulate Cobus so that I can find the idol without him knowing. But then going to tribal council, I saw this posted a couple times online. He was totally trying to pull the Joe Mena from Survivor Triple H of, I'm going to get up, I'm going to look at how everyone's reacting, and that's going to determine where I play my idol. I say with full confidence, as he was approaching Nico there, he was going to play that idol for Ting Ting until he saw everyone's shocked faces and misinterpreted that to mean, oh, they're voting for me. I guess I'll play my idol on myself. And as a result, good God, did he worsen his position so much so between episodes 2 and 3.
Firstly, Mike, how dare you? It is not the Joe Mena. That's the Tony move. Joe Mena, everything he does is a clone of Tony, right? But just like the bodega version. Yeah, he was trying to pull the Tony, I guess, the Joe Mena. And yeah, I guess their reactions were genuine. They were genuinely fearful that he was going to play it on Ting Ting, you know, because she also raised her hand when he raised his hand. They were obviously fearful of the connection. They'd asked him about it earlier in the day. And also, it was so obvious that she was going. They literally talked about it at tribal council. So if they were going to be scared that he could play it effectively, he was scared. They were scared he was playing it on Ting Ting. But the way that he saw it, He just saw fear when he was standing up. And I guess in that really, really fearful moment, and in what is a huge moment of going up to play an idol, that's where his read was wrong. And unfortunately, it was very wrong. You know, as you said, Tevin, that Jacques is a podcaster. I've already seen some of the contestants from season 6 giving it back a little bit. You know, Jean on Twitter was talking about how he criticized her and giving it right back. So he knows what it's about. But I think we're not pretending, any of us, that this was any way good. It was kind of a disaster for a game we've really, really been impressed with up to this point.
You know, I have to say that before going onto the show, I used to have so many opinions on people's moves, their gameplay, the way they play it. And when you go on the show, it becomes so difficult to criticize certain players' moves because you don't really think about what's happening during
the
Yeah, I know. So in this case, I could tell that Jacques probably thought this was going to happen for a while. There was a point, I don't know, did he mention that they should try and get the vote onto him? I think I remember something like that.
Yeah.
That was bad as well. So that was worrying to me.
He implanted something into his own mind where he started making himself paranoid over something that was never going to happen. Overall, I think that was one of the worst moves he could have done. He was in such a powerful position. He goes there, he misreads everyone. Ting Ting's face was so funny. I mean, her reaction to him not giving her the idol was, I actually started laughing. I couldn't believe it was happening. And I felt so bad because Ting Ting actually studied medicine with me at Stellenbosch University.
Oh,
so
really?
I do know her. Yeah,
oh,
so we studied medicine. She was 2 years or 1 year below me. So I was so bleak for her as well because there was this loyalty, you know, fellow doctors who studied together. And I felt so bleak about her leaving.
Tevin, are you now happy that you are like the best performing doctor on Survivor South Africa, like in the last couple of seasons? So,
though I think this position was cursed in Survivor South Africa. All doctors on the show so far have gone out pre-merge.
I know, it's crazy. It's such a bad thing. And I went up like number 7. People are like Tevin 7.
Shame.
Tevin remaining. I'm making all these rhymes and things. It's so crazy.
Yeah, well, I want to talk about Jacques' move. So we'll start with, we've been talking about the idol play. As we've said, the read, totally wrong. And one of the things I think I've consolidated the most since podcasting about Survivor full time and thinking about it incessantly is that I've realized reads are pretty much everything on Survivor. They are the currency of the game, and the difference between reading the situation correctly and reading it incorrectly is a chasm. It's not a subtle distinction. So for people who are saying, well, you know, if he had gone home with an idol in his pocket or had played over Ting Ting and gone home, it's like, that's a very different situation. That's not at all what was happening. That's fan fiction. And if he had read that correctly, that would have been impressive. But his read was, I would call, bafflingly wrong. And I think that's why we're criticizing it now. But that's obvious. The read was bad. I want to talk about the move, because I don't think this was a good move. I don't feel like he should have been idling out Kubis to begin with, or even playing the idol here. So, Mike, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would agree. I think that this was, I really do feel like, and you can get a sense from Jacques, you know, voting confessional where he votes for Kobus, where he says, you know, I'm not the weakest guy here. I have to feel like some of this is rooted in that day one decision that Kobus made where he called Jacques the weak link on the tribe. And, you know, Jacques said it's something that he's used to, but it is a bit odd to me that this is sort of like deep-seated revenge that he's had for quite some time where, you know, Kobus came back and he found the idol under Kobus's nose, and now he's plotting to take out Kobus, and he's planning to pull, you know, an Angelina and take his clothes and have him, you know, leave them behind once he's blindsided. So it is really interesting that for someone who is so rationally level-headed as Jacques, that he is really planning to, you know, to go after Kobus so hard. But yeah, I feel like even if this move had worked, it would be such an interesting scenario to leave the tribe with, because then you'll have Tanya coming back, who's a complete wild card on her own. But you've essentially, you know, shown your cards fully and saying, hey, I can find idols. I can, you know, play idols masterfully. Watch out, bros. I can take you down. The guys thing isn't happening as much as you thought it was earlier on in the episode. This felt like maybe too much of a big move early on. You know, I think he's going to benefit heavily from the fact that there is a swap going into the next episode, so he doesn't have to necessarily marinate in the ramifications of this decision. But this did not necessarily feel like the most well thought out plan for going back to camp after tribal.
Yeah, Tevin, what did you think of the move in general?
I think it was too soon to sort of ostracize himself from the rest of the camp. I mean, from the tribe. He knew for a fact that Kubis and him are never going to get along from day one. I think that sort of manifested itself from that day one. You're right, Mike, in saying that that sort of just triggered him from the beginning. And you lose all sense of rationale when you're on the island. You don't. The rational side of you starts to slowly fade away as you build up that anger towards somebody saying you're the weakest in the tribe. So I think he did let that get the better of him. Eventually, it became more about getting whoever's out. And if he did, he should have definitely planned that better. Knowing that there's a tribe swap coming soon, it's something you kind of predict while on the island. So I think he kept that in mind. So if he saved Ting Ting, he knows he's got a loyal partner with him towards the end. But yeah, I think it's still too soon to make such a drastic move away from your tribe.
Yeah, when so I guess comparing it, Tevin, Mindanao went to the first tribal council right before the swap in Philippines. Did you, Werner, or any other tribe have any thoughts as to whether a swap would be coming soon in your first vote?
I think we did. So what happened was we kind of knew that at some point we're going to get split up. We had to sort of balance out, should we vote people like Jean out or keep them in because Stacey Lee wants to quit? But let's maybe keep Jean in case Stacey Lee does quit and a swap does happen. We still have someone with us. So you do consider the fact that there's a swap coming up. But I think even if there is a swap coming up, all he has is Ting Ting and the rest of a new tribe. So either way, this is such a bad decision because it's not like him and Ting Ting are going to go on to the same tribe together. There's no assurance of that happening. So either way, I think this is still a bad decision.
Yeah, I would agree because I think it felt like he was in a good spot, you know, in the tribe, in too good a spot to necessitate a minority idol play here. Like, surely it seems like a pretty cohesive six. He's obviously, Hubus is giving information, he's close with Ting Ting, he wanted to keep the six together. So it didn't feel like he was majorly on the outs, maybe only in his own mind. So if you're going into a swap and you have one ally who's super loyal to you, while that can be good, it might be better to have more people who you have a good relationship with and can work with going into a swap just to better your odds. I also think that if he really wanted Kubis out, and I also was cringing because it felt really personal and that's not the way that you want to play like a very strategic game, but if he really wanted it, surely there was another way. I mean, maybe because he had all this information against Kubis. He had the fact that Kubis, you know, took the idol clue over the Flint, and Flint has been a very, very big talking point at Ta'alo. I feel like Dante, tell him that and he might flip because he's been so mad about the lack of fire. It's a huge betrayal of trust that they haven't had fire for a week at this point because of Corbus. Is there some way he could have worked that there? I think possibly, and he could have maybe worked with Meryl. They're targeting the weak and they're seeing the women as weaker, so could she have come with them? I think there are ways it could have been done anyway. I think that's first prize. I think second prize, you know, the second best plan would just be to let Ting Ting go because it's way too soon to upset the apple cart and it seemed like he was in a fine enough position. And I think the third best plan would be, you know, obviously to save Ting Ting here. And the fourth best plan was what happened. So very unfortunate. He lost a lot out of this. He lost a lot. There's a swap coming. He could always, you know, be saved with that and he still has a way to go, but I hope it was like a learning lesson about, I guess, paranoia, as you said, and that super fan antsiness. Like, I think the only reason he wanted to come make a big idol play was maybe because of his super fandom and ticking off that bucket list item. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, I wonder if, to Tevin's point, paranoia might have had a place in it. You know, I'll compare it back to our guest, but I remember, Tevin, in your boot episode was really built around, for lack of a better term, your sort of confidence as to your position in the game, saying, you know, I'm the creator of the alliance, I'm the captain. This is before the whole bus driver, bus builder thing. I wonder if Jacques, as the super fan, looks into that, maybe plays the metagame a bit and says, okay, this is a game you can never be too confident in, where, you know, there is this one moment where Ting Ting is talking to Kobus about trying to convince him to leave his clothes behind. And I think it's him and Meryl and maybe Felix in the shelter. And Meryl's like, oh, what are they talking about? Maybe something was running in Jacques' head at that time of, wait a minute, what if, you know, Ting Ting is sort of spreading my name around at this point? She knows it's her at this point. It's totally within her position to throw me under the bus. So I'm wondering if maybe his super fandom here maybe makes him feel like, I know what's happened to some of these people, even in the most recent season of Survivor South Africa, Philippines. Let me play it safe here and keep myself safe, at least through this round, though it ended up being, you know, to the detriment of a lot of other things.
But the reason I don't think that happened is because, A, I truly believe he went up there to read the room. He was stalling for time to see if he would be playing it on him or Ting Ting. And he also voted for Kubis. Like, if he was expecting Ting Ting to betray him, he still voted with her. So I think that he wasn't, you know, not a betrayal on purpose. He was meaning to keep the relationship going, keep the whole Mike and Shannon thing that we were meant to be doing. But it was just, you know, that he really did read the room wrong there. I feel like their relationship was fine. I'm just thinking about it now. The Jacques and Ting Ting connection lasted one episode.
I don't know. I just don't believe that he waited to go up there to read the room. I feel that he had a plan in motion. When he mentioned try and get them to vote for me, why would he do that? He sort of had something. He wanted to make it. I think as a super fan, he has an idol. He became very paranoid. He has two. He has an idol and a clue. That on the island can make you think of so many new scenarios that a player who has nothing can't really do. So he starts to really make up these plans and make it. And because he's a super fan, he probably wanted to make a bold move. Go out there, try and get some of them to vote for him, and then play the idol and save himself. That makes for such good credits for the end. I don't know. I just think it was a mistake on his side completely. I don't know, though.
Well,
it was a tough one.
Trying to pull all the votes to play the idol, that actually is like classic Joe Manna. So that's something we can actually credit to Joe Manna.
Yeah.
That's interesting that you think he wasn't reading it at the time. I think a lot of people took extreme pause when they were hearing Jacques go, I'll pull the votes to me, because you're not an option. It's really obvious. It's a really down the line idol play. Why would you be complicating it now? So that's really interesting that you think maybe this was his plan all along. And if so, if you have such a good thing with the tribe, like why would you try to pull votes for you? That I hate that even more. And I've just discussed everything I just liked about the move. So, I mean, do you think that's a possibility?
Not to mention that Tanya was, you know, they kept saying, okay, ting ting today, Tanya tomorrow. It's super easy. But now Jacques has significantly shaken up his position on the ladder to now maybe he's fallen at the bottom. And Tanya, the person who vehemently ditched her tribe, this tribal council, has now, you know, stepped up one rung. You know, she's no longer public enemy number one because she hasn't at least done anything to try to screw over someone like Kobus directly.
I don't know. We'll never see it, but I'm not so sure that he could possibly fall even below Tanya. Like, that's how disliked Tanya was in this tribe, even in the secret scenes. Like, it seemed very personal. Obviously, they're swapping, so we won't get to see it. But yeah, it would have been an interesting battle if they lost again. Jacques versus Tanya. Who were we more angry at? You know, talk about wanting to get rid of someone for the Flint. They would have just been dying to push them both out and get extra Flint.
Yeah, I think Jacques still probably more safe than Tanya. There's certain people on the island who, when they get under your skin, like Martinez, when someone really gets under your skin, it's really difficult to forget about it. You cannot, because every single thing they say, everything they do, it just grinds you for some reason. It just gets under your skin to a point where you get very misdirected and you start to focus not so much on the game, but on that person. So I think that's also something that happened to Jacques. He started to focus on Kobus way too much.
Yeah.
On that note, I would love to hear from you, Tevin. When you watch Tanya on your screen, and there aren't any, I guess, direct comparisons, but are you having some Martinez PTSD in terms of trying to work with a larger than life character who is very confident in themselves and the decisions they make?
You know, I never really got to speak to you guys about this, but yeah, I went into Survivor with such a different strategy in mind. I planned to play a very quiet, low-key game until I saw Martinez standing on that boat with a three-piece suit. I mean, he got me just on the first moment I saw him. He made me rethink my entire game plan. The moment he first spoke to us and ordered us around, I was like, oh gosh, I have to change everything. This guy is too much. He's very overpowering. He's very confident. And people like that tend to get under your skin immediately. If it's sort of a diluted confidence, you try and use them and bring them in as an ally, which is something I eventually tried to do. So with Tanya, I think she's someone who anybody who can see how annoying she's sort of becoming towards the tribe, they can pick that up and take her with them as an easy vote for the end, because you know that no one will really vote for her to win because of how much she's getting under their skin. So I'd say she's in a very good position right now.
Yeah, I mean, but Martinez showed that can be a double-edged sword, right? It's so tempting to take them to the end. But then you also have to spend the next 30-something days with Tanya, and we haven't seen her vote, but she might be a bit of a loose cannon. So it's like, yeah, that comes with its own problems too. But, you know, to the person who can pull it off, that might be the winning game for you.
That's Robin Phillip. I always think of Robin Phillip when that happens. And like, he managed to really utilize this guy's annoying features and still control him somehow. And I tried to do that with Martinez, but he's so unpredictable. It's so difficult. But you're right. To that point, it's very difficult.
Can I also say that maybe I'm in a boat here on my own, maybe in a three-piece suit, but this was a slightly positive episode for Tanya. At least compared to the other two, I thought this was not a good episode for Dante. I think we're expecting like the downfall of Dante very soon, just considering how I listen. I'm going to keep throwing these out until one of them gets accepted.
Like Jacques and Idols.
I mean, who would have thought that Mr. like totally copacetic like coffee shop owner was just so, I don't know if he was hangry at this point, but when he tells Tanya to her face, like, I don't care. I don't care about your opinions. Even Cobus looked up to him like, damn, that is rough. So it was a very odd portrayal of this, of Aquaman, who was so, you know, mellow the past couple of episodes. It really surprised me.
Yeah. And there's more of that in the secret scenes as well. I mean, Tanya actually had a pretty good episode based on the fact that she's now aware that everyone doesn't like her. So her awareness is good. And I also thought she came off as like in this episode and in the secret scenes as pretty reasonable. And everyone else just, you know, seemed very angry at her in ways that seemed unreasonable, I guess. But as you said, Tevin, we don't really know what it's like to live with her 24/7. I feel like they're probably just at their wits' end, and maybe that's not the part of themselves that they want to be shown on national TV, but they're definitely like at the end of their tether with Tanya.
Yeah, the same thing happened with Felix and Tanya when they were in the under the shelter and they were wanted the dry spot. You know, you see the side where you're like, come on, she's sitting in the spot. Let's not overdo it. Like in that case, Felix could look a bit rude as well. I don't really think it's a big deal, but they made it seem like Tanya's the wrong one. And that sort of happens. You start to do things and say things that you would never really do, but this person gets under your skin to a point where you want to do these small things back at them. You don't want them to sit under that spot. You know, you don't really want them to have a good time because they're doing so many annoying things to you that it really gets under your skin. Like for us wanting to vote out Martinez, but he wants to quit. So we think of the next best. Let's misspell his name when we vote him out.
One of the very few things, unfortunately, we weren't able to see on South Africa was the fabled Matthew Anus vote. That was really something that never came to be.
So sad.
Well, and the interesting thing about it too is that, you know, from what we saw with that argument between Tanya and Dante, Tanya did technically have survivor history on her side. We even talked about this last week with Rob as to, wow, it is really strange that, you know, they're not getting Flint as a reward. And Dante ended up being the technically correct one here in saying that, yeah, you don't get Flint until you go at tribal council. That first decision really did make a lot of waves as to how, you know, the next week or so would play out. But I thought Tanya was technically correct as well in that in every single past iteration of Survivor, Flint was a reward of some part of a challenge if you don't have it yet. So like you said, Tevin, is one of those things where like she was coming from a right place, but I think she just built up such a history, especially in those first few days of really getting on people's nerves, where like it was once again in this episode, as we saw in the last episode, where when people are arguing with Tanya, everyone else is just like laughing, even right next to them, as saying like, yeah, this isn't a legitimate argument. Tanya's being silly. Tanya's being Tanya. We're not going to listen to what she's saying.
Yeah, I'm extremely compelled by Flintgate because they're trying to work out what's happening with the Flint based on, you know, any type of precedent. But this is an extreme anomaly that we haven't seen because of Island of Secrets. And I love that they've made them wait for it because Kubus must be like feeling extremely guilty. I also think it's hilarious how transparent Kubus is about Island of Secrets. I have some quotes here of things that he says. He says, if Tanya comes back with fire or a tarp, we know she doesn't have an idol or clue. It's like, wow, I wonder what you did at Island of Secrets. There was another one, too. He said, if she's for the team, tomorrow she must show up with Flint or whatever the case may be. So, like, Kubus A thinks that the Island of Secrets gives you the same dilemma every time and everyone will have a clue or Flint, just model or whatever award. And he's also like, if anyone was sitting there, they'd be thinking, why is he so, does he think this one particular scenario is going to happen over and over again? So he must have been feeling really, really guilty about this, which I find highly entertaining, to be honest.
Cobus is growing on me. I think it's because, like you said, he even admits it to Ting Ting. Like, he's like, I have no brain. I need someone to be the brains for me. And I really think he's being sincere with that. Plus, I can't not love someone who says tarpe diem. That just comes out of like the best place of my pun filled heart.
That was better than Jark, to be honest.
As well.
I think that's right up there with Jark and Dawnfall. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so to talk about Talu then more broadly, just the Kubus thing in particular I find hilarious, but they were all also so bad in this episode. They made the Chizzy very difficult for me with slim pickings this week. No split vote, you know, and I think a lot of that, I'm completely speculating, could be coming from Kubus because, as we know, he knows the most about maybe where idols come from. He thinks that maybe he's kind of localized all of the knowledge you know, with him or the people he's told of who has a clue. So he feels the need that if Tanya comes back, then they have to worry about splitting a vote. Then they have to worry about an idol because who knows what she found on the Island of Secrets, but everyone else might be fair game. So as such, the whole tribe, for some reason, think it's okay to pile all the votes on Ting Ting, to tell her that she's going, to not blindside her. And I do wonder if Jacques was worried about a 2-2-2 split, just because it seems so obvious. And I know that sometimes superfans think, you know, what would I do? And Jacques would probably split the vote. And they didn't, which was the wrong move. And so he fell for that, that, you know, all the votes were going to Ting Ting. What do you think about that, Tevin?
Yeah, I think we also have to consider the fact that Dante and Quibus, they have this sort of personality that can become very overpowering for some people. I think someone like Jacques and Ting Ting, when they sit back and look at these two sort of powerfully like getting over on the tribe, Felix is also starting to take over that role. Dante being blatantly rude to Tanya, that's something that Ting Ting's definitely not going to like. I mean, I know her. Jacques also not going to like something. So I think that's something that played a role and a factor in Jacques' decision. I think he really wanted to separate Quibus from Dante and Felix, get this guy out as soon as possible. Then Dante and Felix have less power over this tribe if there is no tribe swap coming up, because they don't know what's coming next. It's just assumptions up until what happens next week. So over and above, I think Quibus should have went home. I can see I know if I was on the island and Dante and Quibus on the island, they would be two people I would consider trying to get out constantly from day one.
Yeah, but this is why I think that there would be the ability to turn against Quibus without an idol. And I don't know how much that was attempted because we definitely didn't see it. But as we're talking about Flintgate, you know, it's all on Quibus that they don't have Flint. I feel like that very emotional thing of like, we could have had fire on day two and we don't because he kept this clue from you. I feel like that is so much ammo, you know, literally ammo to use against him. And I really think that there was something there. Like, I understand that Jacques wanted to save Ting Ting. Like, I get it. It's like, I love Mike. Like, he loves Ting Ting. It's the same thing. But I think that there were other ways to do it. And then, you know, if you couldn't go with those other ways, you have to let her go. But surely between Jacques and Ting Ting, they could have come up with a way to use the social connections and the information that they had rather than having to play an idol so early, which is should be or used to be at least rare in the game. And I don't think playing an idol on day 8 spells good things for day 39.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, I also wonder if the timing of this could have played into it as well. Like, if they had gone to the first tribal council, I think everyone would have shrugged it off if Jacques had that information of like, well, we're going to get Flint here. I mean, I'm assuming that would have been Dante's point of view of, yeah, well, we're just going to get Flint right after this. So, you know, what's 3 days off our back? But yeah, to your point, I mean, they've gone a week and a half. Flint was very much at the top of mind because they can't eat anything. All they can do is just, I guess, eat those fly covered bananas at that point. So they don't exactly have many food options, which sort of have made them suffer a bit in the challenge in particular. So I definitely think there was an argument there. Maybe Jacques felt like he didn't necessarily have the votes there. If he really did feel like a tight trio between, you know, Dante, Cobus and Felix, but I guess, you know, time will tell. This might, like last week when we were questioning why Nicole and Steffi got rid of Paul and that ended up somehow working out for them this week. God only knows in Survivor South Africa. Maybe Jacques will pull a Natalie Anderson and we'll be like, wait a minute, I thought this was the plan. I did notice, actually, totally tangential to this. Did you notice that I don't think Nico read the Cobus votes, did he at the tribal council?
He didn't, and I'm glad you've brought this up because I got a lot of questions about this, wondering how Jacques was saved for his vote for Cobus not being there. You know, there is a chance now that they just think he got super paranoid, he played it for himself, he wasn't involved with Ting Ting, so there is the hope there, you know, not knowing that he voted for Cobus. I'm gonna, you know, I am the host of International and RHAP, so I feel like I have some expertise in this because we've seen it happen before in International. So for US Survivor, they stack the votes and they have a system. Either they like restack it after an idol play or a surprising idol play, or they you know, there's speculation that there are compartments that Jeff is using to read the votes. But as far as I'm aware, and Tevin, I want you to talk about this if you know anything being a player, but as far as I'm aware in International, they don't always restack after an idol play. So I think production were as sure as we are, as we were at the time, that he was going to be playing that idol for Ting Ting. So all the Ting Ting votes came out first. They were supposed to be, you know, nullified there, and then he was supposed to, you know, Kulbus was meant to go home with the last two votes. So Tevin, do you have any insight there into why that might have happened?
Yeah, no, that's almost exactly what happened. So once the votes. So what happens is after we vote, they get the votes and then they go to their own room and they decide on how the votes are going to be read. And there is no changing it. Once he comes back, that's how the votes are going to be read. So whether or not he plays the idol, there's nothing going to change. So Quibus not being mentioned was probably them anticipating that he's going to play it for the tribe and hopefully leaving in a good position because he had such a good move on his side. But he obviously left them with some really weird expressions. I can imagine the whole crew just being like, what the hell just happened?
He shocked us. Yeah, he shocked production. He shocked Ting Ting and he shocked all the players. Like, this was literally a blindside of every single person that he did this.
Ting Ting's face looks exactly like what the entire world probably felt at the time.
Oh,
I mean,
my goodness.
That face was exactly how I looked at the screen. I'm pretty sure you guys did it. Like, what is happening?
I totally agree. I mean, look, it's a major move to play an idol early anyway. And I feel like I need to break this down before we kind of move on to everything else, because I was the David Wright expert with Rob before Age of Extinction, and he played an idol for Jessica Lewis in episode 4. And I went to bat for that move and said I thought it was a good move. I said that a loyal ally is more important than an idol, and I stand by that. But I feel like that comparison is being made, but it was such a different situation where David was trying to cobble together a majority and kind of endear himself to some people and get some loyalty there. Plus, he was like such a non-threat at that point that he could kind of do what he wanted, whereas I feel like Jacques was at a good point under the radar, but he's still a super fan. He still might come off as shady. And now he's cemented himself as being shady. And I still feel like, you know, better to have a loyal ally than an idol. But it would have been worth losing a loyal ally here to keep the idol, to keep your reputation, to keep, you know, a few people on your side that he seemed to be working really well with. And if his position in the tribe was worse than what we saw and he felt like more of an outcast and that was authentic, then that's a sin too, that he wasn't obviously socially connecting as well as it looked like on screen. Because to me, it really did seem like he said he wanted to keep the six together. It seemed like a pretty cohesive six against Tanya. So it's crazy that this massive crack seems to have formed in the vote. I don't think that that's, you know, how the actual tribe dynamics were.
Well, it's really interesting as well, just because when the votes come in, I don't know, just looking at the way that these people reacted, you know, their shocked faces at this idea of the idol. I wonder what Cobus was thinking in the moment, too. So I think he'll be a very interesting person to watch coming back to camp, because first, as we said, Jacques can get away with it and say, oh, yeah, no votes went to Cobus. I just threw a vote away. Or no, I voted for Ting Ting. Who knows who Ting Ting voted for? But Cobus now knows that Jacques found the idol with the clue that he had given him. So now that he has that information, what exactly is Cobus going to do? That might bear out as to exactly how much, to your point, Shannon, what exactly the leadership structure is on Ta'alo. Because one of the issues with the tribe that we sort of talked about in previous episodes was, up to this episode, it was just all about Tanya and the fact that Tanya was on the bottom. We really didn't know too much as to how the other people in Ta'alo were functioning. We don't even know. I mean, we know more this episode, but I still don't know, like, where Meryl is, for example. I know that Tanya, she's only in one of Tanya's 3-4 personal alliances, but I don't exactly know where she fits into everything. It looks like things are going to get jumbled up as it is, but it was certainly an interesting tribal council. It's a really interesting tribe in general, and so it'll be very interesting once they shake it up now that there's some inherent drama in there, but I'm very excited to see. Hopefully we get, you know, the post-tribal council night scene before the credits, before they swap, because there's going to be, you know, what we thought the big, you know, fireworks are going to be after the first or the second vote weren't really there in these two episodes. But I feel like there's going to be a lot of fireworks after this third one.
Yeah, and that is a really good reason to want your target to be Quibus. If you're idling someone out so that he can't be angry that you used his idol against someone else and that you found it without him. So I get that. And yeah, I mean, before this episode, the only thing we'd seen of Ta'alo, all the sub-alliances had Tanya in the middle and they were all fake. So hard to tell the strategy. And I actually do want to use that to pivot to talk about Tanya. As you said, it's all about Tanya. And I want to talk about the Island of Secrets and the decision that Felix described as being punched in the face, or even worse than being punched in the face, which was that she got to miss tribal council. She gets to choose what tribe she wants to be on, or she could have chosen to go back to her camp. Tevin, what did you think about this as a, you know, advantage in the game?
I think it was such a great moment and a great time for this to happen, because this was the one tribe where everybody was so set on one person going home. I mean, this was the best tribe for this to happen. So I think this just worked out so perfectly. It was so entertaining to watch them all wait for Tanya to get back with all these plans. Like, oh, she better come with Flint. She better come with something. If she doesn't, I mean, Kourbis and all his exposing tales. There were so many things that could have happened. I think she managed to really read the game at that point, and it impressed me a lot because for the whole first few episodes, you tend to think she has no sense of awareness of what's going on. And she slowly picked up on it, and I was very impressed about that. I think it was such a perfect episode for her. All of this was just, I wrote a note here. I wrote like Tanya rejuvenated. That's what I wrote next to her name. She's still in a position where everybody kind of dislikes her, but she can easily go to another tribe and just feed them information. And I think that could also work out for Jacques. If he can maybe make up a lie that Kourbis showed him the clue and maybe say something like Kourbis said that you guys were voting for me, you know, make up something to get him out of this position. The tribe swap is going to definitely play a role to help those two players specifically.
From a storytelling perspective, I agree. This was fantastic. There is the face crack of the century when... I love how this season they've also been doing very unconventional tree mails. Like in the first episode, they get a tree mail that says no challenge today. That is so strange from a survivor perspective. This time they get one that's like Meryl says, oh, yeah, here's, you know, hope you're enjoying your day. By the way, Tanya's not coming. And they actually have to make her reread it because they thought she made it up. That she pulled a Nick Danza and made up a little stanza. But the interesting. So that was really fun that to your point, Tevin, of course, the one person that they're going to vote out ends up getting to skip tribal council. That being said, this is one of the most overpowered advantages I have seen in quite some time. You know, it's one thing to miss the tribal council. It's another one to miss the tribal council and know there's a swap coming up and get to pick the tribe you're going on to with the swap. So it really was a lucky draw on Tanya's part. Though I will also say big kudos to Saula, who we've questioned their strategic decisions in the past couple of episodes, but they were all wise enough to know, let's send the obvious person to Island of Secrets. We questioned, you know, I think it was Lao Mei sending Rob to Island of Secrets last episode. Here, they made the right decision, send the weak person so that they get an advantage to keep themselves further in the game. But I mean, she really has the pick of the litter here. And if it ends up, you know, shaking down, where if it's a random swap and we get something where we get, you know, one overpowered tribe and two weaker tribes, you know, she can very easily pick her spot. So I can't say from a game design perspective that it's the most fair thing in the world. From an entertainment perspective, the fact that this fell into the hands of arguably one of the most entertaining characters of the season is just fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of missing tribal council, I think a lot of people have been screaming that this is overpowered, like you say, Mike. You know, missing tribal council was built into Ghost Island at the beginning, and that wasn't even the advantage, and then you had the chance to play a game as well. So I feel like there's precedent there in Survivor history. Being able to pick your tribe, I think, yeah, that's where it becomes a little irresistible. That's where it becomes very, very powerful. And obviously, even if she had chosen to go back to camp, she would have had the intel that a swap is coming. So she got a lot of information. She got a lot of, as we said, power there to pick her tribe. I wonder if they could have, you know, workshopped this to make it more interesting. Because I hear people asking, you know, what kind of player would want to go back? I think there are scenarios where people would want to go back. Obviously, by missing tribal council, you lose your vote. You lose your power. Someone like Rob last week might have been like, send me back. Like, I want to be able to know what's happening, you know, if I'm in no danger at all. Someone like Mike on Lao Mei, for example, is in a majority of four, wants to get Rocco out. He might not want to, you know, give up that majority there and come back for his allies. So I do think there are situations where people will come back instead of staying. And it's, but then again, so hard to do that if you're literally going to be able to choose your tribe. Like, that's such a huge advantage. So it becomes a bit irresistible. I wonder if maybe they made it, you know, stay here, miss tribal, be able to choose your tribe versus go back with two votes. You know, like, let's make it kind of more of an even, more interesting debate about, you know, something that seemed really, really useful, and especially useful for Tanya, who was definitely staying no matter what, versus, you know, something, why would she go back with nothing?
At least also maybe, because I think she's allowed to pick the tribe she wants to be in after they've all been shuffled, which is a bit excessive now. I mean, you literally get to stand there, watch everyone, and then decide. I think she should have at least been able to pick a tribe there, at least, and then her decision will impact her later once they get shuffled. So it was a bit too much. They gave her way too many. There were too many variables here that were positive rather than negative.
Yeah, no, well, that's a good way to put it.
I think that And I think that's also like, if you're on production side and you want them to take the deal, that's what you do, right? You offer a bunch of different writers to that contract that would really make them want to take it. Because, I mean, we had some interesting stuff in episode one. Episode two, unfortunately, ended up in a no vote scenario that didn't really end up, you know, bearing fruit that much when it came to drama outside of Rob having Paul's idol around his neck, which we can definitely talk about when we get to the Saula of it all. But here, I feel like this is, you know, this is something that they really wanted someone to indulge in. So maybe that's why they made it overwhelmingly positive. Something I wanted to point out, and maybe this is sort of like an international difference thing, but I know a friend of the podcast, AJ Mass, pointed this out to us. So I noticed in Tanya's note, they spelled swap S-W-O-P. Tevin, is that how swap is spelled in South Africa?
Yes, it is a very common way of spelling it, but you can use S-W-A-P. So both are correct. We use both interchangeably. So yeah, you can.
Wow. Thank God we had Tevin, because I would not have known that as your resident South African.
Swap. Yeah. So it's definitely, it definitely is used interchangeably here in South Africa.
So, Tevin, so we wanted you first for Biostrath, second for Survive for South African spelling lessons, and third for your strategic insights. That is now the official order of why you are on this podcast.
I am your survivor. Oh, and by the way, Mike, it's Quibus. It's not Cobus.
I'm sorry. So am I supposed to put an R there between the O and the B?
It's almost like Quibus. Quibus.
Oh, this is the rest of the podcast now.
So it's like cool bus, but without the L.
Yeah.
Why is that where you would go with it? Mike, you have like 18 weeks to get it. You'll get it eventually.
Cool bus is the Matthew Anus of Survivor South Africa Season 7 now.
The bus was a Werner and I were standing there. Werner's like, we should make a bus. And then when we're on the bus, we should start kicking people off. And we're like, okay, cool. We'll put Martinez at the back of the bus on a skateboard. And very ready to cut him off. It was such a funny thing, that whole bus alliance.
I feel like now we're understanding why Dante is so pressed at the moment, just hearing you have the flashbacks about Martinez. But going back to Island of Secrets, there are some things I'm really enjoying about it that I want to point out. Firstly, different levels of power. You know, every mechanism has been, you know, some more extreme, some less. And that makes it really, really hard to predict. As much as Quibus thinks that it's the same thing every time, I'm definitely not...
I cannot hear Cool Bus.
Okay, we'll just call him Cool Bus from now on and just be done with it, okay?
Yeah.
We now dub him Cool Bus. No. Cool Bus, that actually...
Yeah. I think Shark would be happy with that. Shark may be happy with this decision.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, no. So Cool Bus thinks it's the same thing every time. It's very different, which is good. It makes it unpredictable. Another thing which is fun, and not Island of Secrets fault, but just fun based on what's happened in the game, is we're actually going into episode 4 with no idols, which I kind of love. But also, if Saula or Jacques are going to Laume, who haven't found an idol yet, unless they do it very, very early next episode, they might be racing to the well, because there is an idol there that they had a clue for, right for them to find.
Mm. Yeah, that is true, especially if anybody from Saula gets there, because Jacques, and maybe he told Ting Ting, because I know Ting Ting sort of brought up the flip thing in her voting confessional as well. Them and Cobus are the only people to know. The two of them know the exact location. Coolbus knows, like, around
I can't,
what
Mike,
place
I can't
to
do
go.
This all season. I can't. I can't be calling him Coolbus all season. Like,
it's going to be a long season.
I'll get through the podcast.
But Saula, I mean, they had like a field trip to the well to find that idol. So you could imagine, depending on who does it, that they would want to find the idol there. And I'd have to assume, just based on the numbers alone, I'm no war dog, but you'd have to assume that at least some of them would swap over to Laume, right?
Yeah, I mean, someone who knows about where the idol is should surely be on Laume. It would have to be pretty weird odds not to. And look, Kulvis' spot is getting blown up next episode, surely, because both of the other tribes know what the actual dilemma was. Jacques knows, and he has reason now to throw Kulvis under the bus now that his plan didn't work. So I don't know how Kulvis gets through the next episode without someone telling, you know, his other tribe mates the decision that he made in episode 1 that he's been keeping from them, you know, for the last several days.
I think Jacques is definitely going to tell the rest of them, right? He has to. I mean, it's the only logical thing to do right now is to put someone else under the fire. That would be the first thing I would do when I get back, is say, Quibus screwed us over. He didn't take the flint. He's the one who put us in the situation where Dante becomes so hangry. It's definitely something I would do once I get back.
Yeah, he's the one who put them in the situation that I think really pissed off Steers. We'll get to it in the social media segment, but Steers was like obsessed with the fire.
Steers, I think, pissed off Saula and then got pissed off by Ta'ala. So I feel like it's, you know, again, bringing balance to it all.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever had steers before? Have you ever eaten steers?
Like, I have, but I left South Africa when I was 8. I became a vegetarian when I was 13. So, like, yeah, I've said it before. The fact that I've been the person on this podcast to talk about steers, to talk about biltong is, like, a cruel irony. It's like, yes, I'm South African, but also this is not my area of expertise. So, yeah, again, Kevin, another thing, you can talk about South African meat. So we'll just put that right above strategic insights, and that is why I'm here.
Because, like, steers burgers are actually really delicious. They're really good. So when you lose out on, like, a steers challenge, just know people are really disappointed. I was one of them. It's one of the most disappointing experiences you could have on the island, not having a steers burger.
I hope their burgers are better than their social media polls, and we're going to get to it. Because I love steers. Yeah, I love the sponsors.
Do not judge the quality of a product by its social media polls, Shannon. That's like rule 101 of marketing. Tevin, I would love to hear from you, especially as a big fan. You know, there have been some comparisons between Island of Secrets and Ghost Island proper. But, you know, as a big fan of the show, obviously this does not surround itself as much in the history as Ghost Island did. But what do you think 3 episodes in about Island of Secrets as a game mechanic from what we've seen so far?
So initially, I didn't really like it. I felt it was very random. But after this last episode, when they let Tanya do this such a random decision, she got such a cool opportunity that it made me reconsider everything. I started to think of all the other possibilities they could have using this island moving forward. So right now, I think I'm enjoying it a little more based on the last episode. But initially, I was a bit skeptical. I mean, there wasn't really any big historical significance to the previous seasons, the same way they did with Ghost Island. But with this last episode, I think I'm kind of growing into it. I don't know. How do you guys feel about it?
What are the Survivor South Africa things that would be on their Ghost Island, you know, as part of the history, like from season 6, what would we have? Would we have, you know, I think we probably spoke about it, but surely Martinez's final tribal council speech would be there. And maybe Werner would have to like vomit up the clue so we could put that there. And then we could have a whole Ghost Island of it.
You could have Tom licking a spoon or something.
Tom's just there.
This is Tom's wet spoon from Survivor South Africa, Philippines.
It has not been washed. No, I mean, I'm enjoying Island of Secrets because I enjoy mechanisms that play into the social and strategic aspects of the game. And what I really liked about this episode was watching Saula, you know, take someone who seemed like the weaker person in the tribe and someone who seemed like an outcast, having a really good read on that and sending Tanya to get an advantage that could kind of upend the tribe and make them weaker competitors. And as I said, we saw it last season with PK not being picked for the challenge and getting an advantage through that. So it's trying to kind of like enable the weak, or the weak in quotation marks, which is good. And yeah, I love that now this might have birthed the Tanya Sipe alliance. As she said, you know, yesterday Sipe crushed the life out of me, and today she breathed life into me, which is a very poetic way to talk about my new favorite duo, Tipe.
Yes, Tipe. Oh, I love that. So I guess talking about Saula a bit, because I'm intrigued to hear from you, Tevin. You know, you spoke about how you ended up granting Martinez's wish, or Martinez, you know, you were going to vote him out anyway. If he hadn't decided to quit at the end, what ended up being that like double swap tribal council. And last episode, you know, there had been some arguments as to whether or not getting rid of Paul over someone like Nathan, who up until literally the 11th hour was ready to go home, whether or not that was a good decision. I guess, you know, aside, you know, what happens to Saul this episode, which is definitely a bounce back from its first 2 episodes. Where do you stand? If you were in their position, would you have granted Nathan's wish, or would you have done what they did and get rid of Paul?
You know, I think that from episode one, Nathan should have went home. I mean, an injury on the island when you're in a tribe and you know you have to win challenges, it becomes something you have to consider from the beginning. So from the very beginning, when he's carrying him on his back, I mean, that's such a random thing to be doing. You're wasting so much energy. This can't be worth it. I don't see it being that worth it. I first thought getting rid of Paul would have been the better thing to do. But then after seeing Nathan come back with so much energy, I mean, he's so fit again. He's back in the game. It seems like it's just worked out in their favor. But initially, I think getting rid of Paul was a bad decision. Getting rid of Nathan was definitely the better decision to make. But clearly, things work out in the end.
Yeah, Nathan's foot is like completely fine now, which is weird. Also, Mike, I have to say for the second time this podcast, what the hell? You asked last episode why there was no parody Twitter account of Nathan's foot. And so you actually literally manifested it into existence. Now there is a parody account and my whole timeline is feet. Why? Please be careful with the way that you talk on a podcast. Like, your words have meaning. I'm asking you, please, don't put feet accounts out into the world.
I'm gonna put out the call for someone to make a parody account of Nathan's South African flag underwear because I found that extremely interesting. And I didn't know, you know, when it comes to showing your pride, I know last season, Tevin, you were on the island with PK, who I think just wore the flag around him. Yeah. Like he was running a marathon or something. And now this time, Nathan's brandishing South Africa on his booty. So
and my whole timeline now.
Hopefully we can just keep working. Yeah, and but I do love that account, how it even has a small touch of, it used to have a bandage on it, but now that, to your point, Nathan has had this miraculous recovery. Now, there's no bandage anymore. It's just a picture of a foot, and we shall track it throughout the rest of the season.
Okay, so now I have to now add that to my social media segment. Like, I'm already putting a lot of work into it. It takes me a lot of time, and I'll just add Nathan's foot to Mahindra and Cape Union Mart. Thank you for the extra work, Mike. Thank you so much for this.
Yeah, and
Gonna be someone who's gonna bite Rob, and like he's gonna definitely get them back. This was a bad decision for the rest of the tribe, I feel.
Well, now he also has a new hairdo too. So this is like a brand new man.
Yeah, okay. Well, I just find it crazy that like his foot is literally fine. They also did not talk about the fact that Rob has the idol.
It's such a crazy thing. I mean, Rob hasn't said anything about the idol. No one's talking about it. Steffi and Nicole seem completely okay with the fact that Nathan and Rob are sort of controlling this entire thing. They're just sitting by, the two of them, as a strong duo. And you can see Steffi's very overpowering. The way she pulls Nicole in the challenge, it's kind of like, get up and move, you know? She's very strong and strong-minded. And she's someone who's very blunt as well. So someone like Steffi, if she doesn't have a strong alliance, she can come across as rude. But it's very unintentional. It's just the way she speaks to people. It's just very straightforward, which I kind of like. But yeah, I think Nathan's going to be in a position where he's going to suddenly take control of this tribe, because he seems like the only one who kind of, when he makes a decision on his own, he sort of gets everyone else to follow it. Very indirectly, though.
Yeah, but I think, yeah, his leadership in the tribe really speaks to why they didn't want to get rid of him. I feel like he's always kind of been taking more of that leadership role and kind of like conducting the powwows after challenges. So I understand that they kind of look to him. But yeah, we speculated so much last week. What's going to happen with the idol? Is it even still valid? I wondered. Rob has it now. What are they going to do with it? And it just wasn't even mentioned. What was mentioned, though, was that they blindsided the flint, which I think is a first. They blindsided accidentally, because it's not like Paul was pulling a Jatir and like, I'll take the flint, which is, you know, possibly a move in the game, but like literally got blindsided, accidentally took the flint. And like, look, I was running so low on options for the Chizzy this week, I was almost going to give one to Paul. Give Paul the point for at least taking the flint on his way out and having some power in this game.
Yeah, I would love to hear from you, Tevin. You know, is this something that regularly happens in Survivor? Because I can't think of like, hey, for safekeeping, you know, we don't want another San Juan del Sur incident where we're asking Nico for flint. Let's put it in his bag for safekeeping. And I don't know whether or not they didn't remember that, or if they Paul did it without their knowledge. But it takes them until the next day to realize that Paul had accidentally pocketed the flint the one time that they voted him out of the game.
I think it's also you trying to consider whether you're going to move islands and whether you're going to get swapped or what's going to happen. So there's always times where you sort of think, I should keep something with me, because if there is a swap and I'm not back at camp to take whatever I need, I should at least have it with me. So that does happen sometimes, where some people are like, hey, keep this with you. We never know if we get separated or something happens, at least we still have it. You know, it's in our possession. So I think Paul sort of just kept it as just a safety mechanism, so it's always with them no matter where they go. Because I obviously don't see this as a Jatia as well. I mean, he's nothing like her. I don't even think he would consider doing something like that.
Yeah.
I hate her. I remember her so much. I really disliked her. But she was so entertaining to watch. But yeah, so you do take that into consideration. I remember there was a time before I went home, I remember Tony specifically telling me, hey, maybe you should take your shoes with you. I mean, you should keep it. You never know, because I bought like this really nice shoe to take to Survivor, and I left it on the island and I went home without it. It was such a sad thing to do. But yeah, it's something you should always consider, keeping your stuff with you, because you never know when you're going to go home. And
speaking
keeping,
of
things like idols and stuff, yeah.
Speaking of stuff, totally tangential. tackle this, I wanted to ask you, Tevin, because I am a purveyor of noticeable hats when it comes to Survivor, and you really rock the fedora on season 6. This season, we've got Nathan with one. We've got Jeff with one. Do you have any takes on the choice of hats this season, considering your own trend setting?
You know, the fedora, I saw Tony wearing it on day one, and I was like, oh, I really want to wear that, because I remember Russell Hans having his hat, and it made him look so much cooler as when he did the things he did.
That
so
feels like a matter of opinion.
Fedora go pretty well. Yeah, that's true. I really liked the fact that someone has something iconic on them. You know, like Rob has his hats, Boston Rob, I'm talking, not Rob from the season. So I wanted something like that. So I asked Tony, can I use this fedora? But then it became a thing where everybody liked wearing the fedora. Everybody wanted to have a day with it. I remember once PK was literally like, can I please use it tonight? And I really didn't want to let him, but I said, it's okay. I said, it's fine, you can use it. Yeah, it's just something you end up, because you get so bored sometimes. You just want to do some extra things just to make the show a little bit more funny or entertaining.
Yeah, forget the flint, like being blindsided with the fedora. That's a way to really stick it to people, you know? Like, you can't make a fire, that's one thing, but imagine, you know, taking their precious fedora. I do think that Paul seems like such a nice guy that I feel like if they told him they were voting him out, he would have just, like, given them the flint. Be like, oh, sorry, this was going to be in my bag. Like, can you imagine how bad that would have been? Like, he totally accidentally took the flint, which I found hilarious. And just one more note on Su'ula, because there wasn't a lot happening on the other tribes, even less on Laomei, I would say. But Sipe, she's someone whose arc in the season has just been a joy for me to watch. Like, she's really risen in the ranks, so, you know, in kind of almost in the background to a point, and it's just like so apparent now what a massive part of the tribe she is. Steffi is like, we had this alliance without you, you totally weren't a part of it, and it has a name, and now you're in it several days later. So the fact that they at least included her in it is good now, and she accepts that with good grace, and I absolutely love the way that she has integrated you know, in these few days. Mike, what are you thinking about CPay's game now?
I think this is just building upon what happened in episode 2. I just love when Steffi brought her into the alliance, because now it's not an alliance. Now it's a club.
Now it's a tribe. It's the entire tribe.
Now that she just renamed the tribe Amigos. Because that's essentially now it's a 5-person alliance. But I think it's more so symbolic than it is literal. I totally agree with you, Shannon, that I think it just shows that CPay has shown that she is loyal, that she's good in the challenges, that she's committed. And who knows, maybe that Tanya relationship will bear fruit, you know, because maybe it is a thing where I'd be intrigued to see what the other tribes think, who is leading Su'ula. And maybe when they look to that first challenge and they see that the most successful they had been up to this point was when CPay was, you know, directing them while they were blindfolded to get all those items. Maybe they think she's a de facto leader, and maybe that's going to bear really well for her when it comes to being brought into other alliances. So, yeah, I mean, it has been a fantastic recovery from being one of the people up for being voted out in day one or day three. And considering the speaking skills she's apparently shown off, her ingratiating into the main alliance and the potential of her showing connections with other tribes, I would actually put her in one of the great positions going into a swap, no matter what the configuration may be.
I did think it was really interesting as well that Su'ula definitely made the Tanya decision as a group. Nathan is actually the one to say it and send her to the Island of Secrets, but CPay says, you know, use it well and really connects with her there. And Tanya ends up, you know, crediting CPay for saving her. So CPay really made the most of that and seemed to be happy to be saving Tanya and making an ally there. But I just thought it was really interesting that she has been credited with that when she didn't even speak the words that sent her to Island of Secrets, and it really seemed like a group decision.
It's almost like Nathan just does it from behind the scenes, the same way I was saying earlier. He is in control, but he's doing it very under the radar, which is a really good strategy. I feel like CPay sort of feels she's in charge of the tribe no matter what. And it's almost like she doesn't really know that most of the time she's not really in charge, which I think may actually be a hindrance in her game moving forward, because she seems to really think she's in charge.
I feel like socially, it just kind of felt like she was the dead mother at a point. Like, these girls seem to really, I don't even know how much older she is than these women, like probably only a few years, but it just seemed like she was like a comforting presence to like more of the sorority girls that Nicole and Steffi ended up being. And I think she did end up being like a pretty positive, you know, person in camp. I don't know if that's a leadership thing, but she seemed, when everyone was upset about the fire, she was kind of bringing everyone up. She braided Nathan's hair, which was apparently transformational. I can't believe his hair isn't a Twitter account as well. So I just
There we go. Yeah. Let it be a thing. Let's get all of Nathan's body parts on Twitter by the end of the season.
I have so much power. I can do anything. If we're going to get anything, can Biostrath follow me on Twitter? Like, that's how I want to use my influence. They literally don't know I exist. Can that be the one thing? Anyway, yeah, I feel like I've really enjoyed watching her just subtly, socially work her way into the group. You know, that's the microcosm of society that I enjoy watching. It's not anything to do with the game mechanisms, and it's literally just people living with each other and their relationships developing. But to move on to Lao Mei, we really didn't see a lot of them in this episode. Mike, what stood out to you about Lao Mei this episode?
What stood out to me is just a couple of moves within that main foursome, because that's really what the action revolved around. And it really comes down to two moves. One was Jeff telling Maba about this guy's alliance that Rocco had set up, which I thought was a very, very good move. I think that, you know, in another world, Maba and Rose could have found out about this guy's alliance, and that could have really sketched them out to Jeff and Mike of, hey, you guys are, you know, taking multiple people to the dance. Who are you going to dance with when the music turns on? And actually that led to, you know, Tevin, when you and PK did Operation Discipline and confronted Martinez about trying to scheme against you, that sort of is what can happen when you don't keep all your ducks in a row and then have people, you know, increase the likelihood of people comparing notes. The other one is Rose, you know, when Maba tells Rose, this is like the only stuff we've got about from Rose Lee so far. And the one thing we know about her now is that she knows she's on the bottom of this alliance, apparently. And you have to feel like that's going to pay off in some way down the line. So I would say that the Jeff stuff, I think he made a fantastic move this week in just solidifying his alliance. And I think we should look out down the line for maybe in this swap situation, maybe Rose makes a very interesting decision. Maybe she turns on her fellow Lao Mei people if she thinks that, you know, down the line, she's at the bottom of this new foursome.
Yeah, I mean, Rose seems very suspicious in general. We've seen her talk about just like, I don't know, her paranoia about the alliances. She feels like she's basically on her own in the game, despite being in the majority. I feel like maybe she's not reading the fact that, like, it's okay right now. Like, it really is okay. For Lao Mei, we didn't see a lot, but I have to say that Rocco's victory dance was definitely the highlight.
Oh, yes.
So good. Like, it literally changed everything I think about Rocco, like how invested he was in that dance. I was like, you're different than I thought you were. And that makes me happy. I like to be surprised when people aren't who I think they're going to be. So, Tevin, yeah, what did you think about Rocco / whatever else was happening on Lao Mei in this episode?
You know, Rocco at first, he struck me as the dumb jock at first. And then slowly I started to see that he's actually playing a strategic game. So what he looks like and the way he speaks is definitely not what's happening up in his mind. He's got a lot of plans going on. His victory dance was amazing. Apparently it's patent as well. So we cannot be doing this dance whenever we feel, guys. We should definitely ask permission. But I have a question. I actually wrote next to Jeffrey's name. Is it really Jeffrey? Is it not Joffrey? And since Game of Thrones came out, he's decided to change it to Jeffrey. Because that was the first thing that went through my mind. Because I'm sure it's written as Joffrey. Or is that just
Kevin, you tell us how to pronounce names. We can't help you. That's like the blind leading the blind. Like, we don't know what we're doing.
Because it's G-E-O-F-F-R-E-Y. So I initially thought it was Joffrey, but he seems to call himself Jeff. So I'm going to go with Jeff for now.
I love this theory, though, that he goes by Joffrey. Then after Game of Thrones came out, it's like, ooh, good. This is myself from that PR nightmare. No, I'm Jeffrey. That's me.
Exactly. I would do that. You don't want to be synonymous with the worst villain. I mean, except for Ramsay Bolton. You don't want to be the Joffrey of South Africa.
Yeah, okay. Well, Tevin, you were literally here to tell us how to pronounce names and how to spell things. Like, we're going to go with whatever you want. If you want to make Jeffrey Joffrey on this podcast for the rest of the season into a very long season, Jeffrey. Okay, I'm just saying you have a lot of power here. We will call people what you tell us to call them. Okay, I want to get
Jeffrey. I think Jeffrey and Mike are a good combination, though. Together, they strike me as very similar individuals. So I think they could run the game for the two of them. If they work well together, it could be a very good duo.
And it was interesting that we got so much more of Jeffrey Joffrey than we did of Mike. Because I feel like Mike was the big person who we heard from Lau Mei in the past two episodes, and now we got some stuff over to him. So it's actually, again, I know I keep going back to you, Tevin, but it was so interesting how in those first few episodes at Mindanao, I feel like with the relationship between you and PK, we heard so much from you, and surprisingly, considering his position in the show, ultimately not a lot from PK. It wasn't until, you know, things ultimately fell out that we saw much more of PK. So hopefully things turn out better for them than they did the two of you, but I was happy to see that side of the relationship. And God, I hope that A, Rocco makes the merge, and B, he goes on a challenge run, only because I want to see that victory dance done after every single challenge he wins.
Yeah, I don't love challenge runs on Survivor. Like, I find that kind of boring. But yeah, if I can see Rocco do that dance 10 times in the post-merge, like, maybe I'll make a concession. Let him just win the whole game, win out to the end, and just be doing the dance at the end when he wins. That would be a huge victory dance if he would actually win the game.
Anyone else feel bad for Durao? I mean, he's kind of like, I have no idea. Exactly. Durao Mariano.
Yeah, I mean, and they don't even discuss him because he's not in that four. He's like with the guys generally, but he's not discussed like as a key cog. It's always Rocco, like et al. And then Letitia, they discuss obviously as being on the bottom. So it's like the whole tribe could exist. And Durao, not only does he not get any screen time, but he's also literally like not even mentioned. It's crazy how purple he is.
Durao, more like Hoorao.
Mike, you're gonna, please. We don't even know if pronouncing it correctly, but it honestly doesn't matter because we never have to talk about him. So we solved it. I want to get to the chizzy, which is the most important part of the podcast. Something I think people are really enjoying the 2-1-1. I think that went well. And as I said, one of the harder episodes to judge for me because everyone was pretty bad. Or invisible, like Drow. So I'll start off and I'll give my 2-1-1. I am going to actually do something, a chizzy first, actually, because I've given a memorial point before, but I've not given two. And I'm going to give two memorial points to Ting Ting. Now, full disclaimer, she followed my cat on Instagram. And this is the type of bribery that I'm willing to accept. Firstly, I definitely am exactly like Ting Ting, like I thought, because she followed my cat on Instagram. That's a weirdly specific thing to do, and I feel like we would be best friends slash are the same person, but yeah, she did follow my cat. But beyond that, I actually think that of Ta'alo, which was the tribe we saw go to tribal council, she was the best. I mean, she knew she was going home. She was pretty screwed by the fact that Tanya was saved. They didn't want to vote her out. It wouldn't have been her. But anyway, I don't think, as I said, it would have been a good move for Jacques to play the idol on her. And it would have been a good move for Ting Ting. So I do believe that he was reading the room in that moment, as I said. And if he had played it on her, we would definitely be giving her the most points. And his wrong read, I don't think, should define her points. He was willing to play it on her. She got all the information from him. She made that social connection to the point where he was willing to save her, you know, to the detriment, I think, of his own game. So I have to give her points there. Two memorial points to Ting Ting. I'm going to give a point to Sipe, like I said. Continues to be a core factor in Saula, and she's just integrated so well. I've talked at length about it, so I'm giving her another point for that. And I'm actually going to give a point to Rocco. For the victory dance, mostly, no. But in an episode where strategic acumen was lacking, perhaps, I think, you know, what you can do is reward other elements of the game. And Rocco really did single-handedly, literally with his hand, like it was so close. He saved himself. And I think that he should be rewarded for that because there was a chance either he was going home or the connection that he has with Letitia, she was going home. So I think he really helped himself here, saved himself. And yeah, he's getting a point as well. Mike, what are you doing with your points this week?
So I'll give an honorary point to Ting Ting as well. I was thinking about it because I really was thinking about, was there anything that she could do outside of, you know, pulling a Benji from Australian Survivor and interrupt Jacques before he plays the idol and says, like, wait a minute, no, are you sure? Like, they're going to be voting for me.
Yeah.
It's really tough to figure out if she could have done anything else. And for what it's worth, she was able to convince Kubus to not bring his stuff to tribal council to make, you know, Jacques' dreams of raiding his wardrobe come true. I guess I'll work my way up from the bottom. I give one point to Sipe for very similar reasons as you, Shannon. I think this fully represents her ingratiating herself into her tribe. And even though it's about to be shaken up next episode, this really does feel like the love tribe. And you have to feel like, depending on the way that things shake out, this tribe stands the best chance of sticking together post-swap, so she's going to have at least hopefully one other person to confide in. I gave one point to Jeff just because I, like I just said a little few minutes ago, I really enjoyed the move that he did in, you know, telling Mamba, being truthful about it to show I'm loyal to you so much so that I'm revealing the other plans that I have. I think that is a good way of, you know, keeping that four tight together. I cannot believe I'm saying this. I'm giving 2 points to Tanya this week.
This is because you said last week that she would get points, and you're now proving a point.
I'm manifesting it. So the thing is, like Shannon said, it was a very low bar this week. It was very tough to find. Maybe that's sort of what we're figuring out with Survivor South Africa as well. Everything is so chaotic that it's just going to be tough sometimes to assign points based on strategic acumen. But I think Tevin made a great point that say what you want to about maybe her not necessarily having the best grasp of reality in the first couple of episodes. But here we saw some introspection. She knew what she had to do. I don't think she necessarily did anything that, you know, was particularly wrong and might have been perceived wrong behaviorally by the other people. But from an objective perspective, she really wasn't doing anything wrong with the Flint stuff. And she was able to have the cognizance to make the right decision. And yes, a lot of these, I would say I'll chalk up a lot of these points to the twist that happened to fall her way at Island of Secrets. But she's in a much better position going into episode 4 than she was in episode 3. And so from that perspective, by a matter of default, I'm going to have to give her my 2 here.
Yeah, for me, like, she's in a much better position, but because she had, like, a massive advantage, you know, I'm not giving her points just because I said last week I didn't think she'd get any points this season, and I'm trying to be right. I really feel like it was more the game mechanisms helping her than herself, but I do think, obviously, her best episode yet, in that she finally seemed to have awareness in knowing that her tribe didn't like her when they were literally laughing in her face. So I do commend her for that. And, you know, if she follows my cat on Instagram, evilcat_melody, I could be persuaded. I'm just saying. But Tevin,
well, I don't know if she's on social media, because, you know, if she did, Rob would be following her like in a heartbeat. Or Rob, American Rob.
Right. Well, she'll have to make an account, much like everyone is making accounts for Nathan's body parts, and then follow my cat. And then we can talk about who gets chizzy points. But Tevin, who are you being bribed to give chizzy points, or fairly giving chizzy points? That's also good.
Okay. Yeah, I think, just to continue with what you guys said about Ting Ting, I also think she was thinking ahead of the game by telling Jacques that he should pack his stuff because we don't know if we're going to get swapped at any point. He should get it out from where he's hiding it, put it in his bag. And so she's thinking ahead. So I think she does definitely deserve some points for thinking ahead of the game. Other than that, I think Jeffrey made a good decision. So I'll also give him a point because by pulling in Mubba and Rose, he made a good decision, and now they definitely trust him. I'm not sure about Rose Lee, but she is a crime scene analyst, so I think she's definitely there to not trust anyone. She's seen some rough things in her life, probably, so I don't think she wants to trust anyone. But yes, I'll definitely give Jeffrey a point. Who else did all right? I think I also, yeah, Rob as well. Rocco as well, because he definitely came out and showed some personality. And I think that's something that a lot of them may have not also anticipated, maybe a random dance from Rocco. But he's definitely going to get some brownie points from the rest of the tribe for being entertaining and being funny. That's something that definitely plays a role when you're having such a miserable time in the cold, in the dirt. Someone being funny and providing some humor, they tend to keep you satisfied. I think my chizzy also goes to Tanya, though. I wrote, yes. Tanya wins my chizzy. Martinez 0.1. That's what I wrote next to her name. She's definitely someone who's entertaining to watch. She was in the right position at the right time. And you have to also think that I'm sure the other tribes, when they walk towards tribal to immunity challenges, when they walk towards reward challenges, they can sort of see when someone's on the outs. I think when someone's that ostracized in a group, they tend to look disappointed. They look on the outs. And so the other tribes can definitely feed off that energy. And that's probably why Saula knew that Tanya was at the bottom. So the fact that she was portraying that image, I think should give us some brownie points as well. She's definitely showed them something for them to give her that opportunity. And obviously the way she's turned out and the way she's going to use this is going to affect her long-term game. So yeah, she wins my chizzy.
Okay, so just for the purpose of the spreadsheet, so it's 2 points to Tanya, 1 to Rocco, 1 to Jeff, and Ting Ting just honorable mention. Is that the math of how we're doing this?
Yeah, Ting Ting. I would actually not make Ting Ting. I just wanted to give you guys a little more about what she had done. But Nathan would definitely be my honorable mention because of the fact that he went from someone who's not even participating in challenges mentally, physically, to now suddenly being this beast in challenges. And he still basically runs the tribe.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, this new 2-1-1 is really getting some variety across the board, and I think that's really good. And speaking of variety, I do want to get next to the Biostrath Variety Hour. This is the title Mike facetiously gave it last week, but I'm actually claiming it to be the title of the sponsored social media segment. Yeah, it's the Biostrath Variety Hour, and it takes me like an hour to compile. So it works, and it takes us like an hour to talk about. So it works literally on every level. Yeah, we talked about the foot account. That's in my notes in all capitals. Why, Mike? So this was funny to me. So we've talked about how Steers have become super shady. They did it last week and now again. So Ula make fire. They're so proud of themselves. They're eating what they call taro fries. They're loving it. And a Steers ad comes up that says, you know what's better? Our famous hand-cut chips and our chili sauce. Firstly, so shady. Secondly, stop comparing yourself, Steers, to Island Food. It's a very low bar. We're not impressed that you're better than Island Food. And it's just so shady to the contestants.
Yeah, it's very much like, well, you could eat a sandwich out of the garbage, or you could come to our restaurant. Like, yes, of course. It's a very low bar to clear then.
What would you rather, eat a Steers or we kick you in the nuts? Like, right, okay, but the fact is, if they...
Because South Africans know how delicious those chips are, so they don't even have to make these random ads. We already know this. You don't need to compare it to such low-level food items on an island.
Right, because from my outside perspective, I'm thinking, how bad is Steers that they have to be... There's like, okay, I promise you we're better than what they're cooking on Survivor right now. It's like, damn, is that what you think you're in the comparing for? Because then you must not be that good. Like, I don't know, maybe I'm just mad on the contestants' behalf that Steers continues to, like, laugh at all their efforts. Like, oh, Dante, good fish catching. Like, we can do better than that. You know, these people are just trying their best, Steers. Please! I will continue now. Biostrath Variety Hour. So the extreme friendliness between the sponsors continues. Bringing back Biostrath. Some people were doing it. We could probably do with it more. They need to be angrier at each other than they currently are. Mahindra also continues to just tweet very slight variations on hashtag always up for a challenge, which I don't love. And I also have to say, Ace, our dear friend Ace from season 6, every single tweet that he live tweets about Survivor South Africa, he tags every single sponsor. And they retweet him. So it might make sense. Because
we have a Survivor WhatsApp group with all the contestants from last season. So season 6, Philippines, we have a WhatsApp group. So Ace is definitely the social media guy. I mean, he loves it. We even talk about it all the time.
Is Martinez in that group?
He was. He left the group. Literally left.
Why?
He quit the group? Like, he quit the game?
Did you say bye, like, Matthew Anus? Like, would you finally get your moment to spell his name incorrectly?
He doesn't give you an opportunity. He's more like, at the moment the group's made, he'll, like, wait until someone says something he doesn't like, he just leaves. He doesn't really give you an opportunity to say bye.
How is Martinez's name spelt in your phone? This is
your
time.
Correctly.
Okay, well, this is your time, though.
Always have to have the name and surname correctly spelled. Yeah, I'm one of those people.
I would love to be a fly on the wall in that WhatsApp group just to hear when Tom posts, like, hey, by the way, PK and I are going to fight in a couple of months.
That's just what happened. Out to the that stage. Is exactly what happened. I mean, we're all like, oh my God, you guys are going to really do this right now. I think Sean also left the group. Aww. I'm not sure why, but everybody else is there. Varna, all of us are there having good chats.
I desperately want to be added to the. What do I have to do to be added to this WhatsApp group? Like, I feel like that would be the most entertaining thing ever.
Shannon, just come in and pretend you're Martinez.
Yeah, you can do it. You can definitely do it. And Jean, you can be Jean, Mike. You can be
Jean. I'll be Jean. Okay. That works.
These are all new identities. Look, last time I did the Chizzy for Survivor New Zealand, the guests would come on and give a prize for the hashtag Rahampa, and I feel like I just had a brainwave. This should be the prize that Tevin will contribute to the Chizzy winner, that they get added to this incredible entertaining group. Like, can you imagine how entertained that, like, it would be worth winning the Chizzy?
That's true. Yeah, we can make that happen.
I want to win the Chizzy.
This with my people.
This is
we are very loyal to season 6. We want nothing to do with season 7. I'm just kidding. We're hoping it's, if not better.
The season 6 WhatsApp group is. This is the best thing to come out of this podcast. And you can just tell Ace, look, it's fine. Like, he can keep going with it. I'm just saying that, like, it actually is working because between all of the sponsors, they have about 80,000 followers. Steers is 70,000 of that. And Ace is getting some traction by tweeting that, like, his tweets have to be very short because they're followed by tagging every single sponsor. So, you know, but you what you sacrifice on length, you gain in exposure. So Good job on Ace there. It was confirmed to me this week that Biostrath do have a different social media manager. So that's why the Biostrath is lacking. So I said it would be a season long. We wanted to see how it would happen throughout the 18 weeks that the season would go on. But I actually found out within the week that that has happened. So you're welcome, everyone, for that information. Steers, in general, were very hyped about the fire. Here's some social media content they gave about that. They said, a true hashtag Steers rear moment. He, speaking of Rob, gets that fire is life. He is us. We are him. What's that, Steers? So dramatic. Yeah, you're a brand. You're not a person. You're not a
Well, group. I mean, it would make sense, considering that's part of their brand. Like, they have these flame-grilled burgers. It's not like they cook their burgers on a tarp. They'd be so excited about that.
They also, Biostrath was asking Steers to give Rob a job for making fire. So it's like, that's not even what Steers
does. This is so strange. I don't have social media anymore, so I'm missing out on all of this entertainment. I actually wish I had it now, just to see these random things happen.
You don't need to, Tevin, because I'm giving you every single thing they do on this podcast every week. For anyone who is, for some reason, not following all of the sponsors, that's why I catch you up right here.
Hey, Shannon, some of us are not allowed to because our co-hosts want to play a game with them.
Okay, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry, Mike. But, like, you can follow them in the off-season and then just unfollow when the season starts. And I will say, across the board, fewer polls in general. But I actually might have got some actual relevant information in the Biostrath Variety Hour, which is that Cape Union Mart tweeted a poll that said, let's say a certain outdoor brand was to get Survivor buffs. What tribe would you want to get your hands on? So, anyway, the tribes, the most people said, so Ula, then Ta'alo, then Laomei. That seems to be the general vibe of who people are rooting for. But, like, burying the lead, are they going to be selling buffs? Because I feel like everyone always asks me where they can get Survivor South Africa buffs, and I might have stumbled upon it in looking at, you know, the sponsors' social media. So, I'm like, did I do something relevant right now? Like, I'm so proud of myself. This was such a good idea.
Cape Union Mart's actually a very good brand to do that. I mean, they would be the most associated with this type of show, I feel, in South Africa. So I think they could be the ones. You may have stumbled upon some true facts right there.
Tevin,
this is completely random, but Tevin, I think you'd be interested to hear this, because I saw something on the Survivor Reddit from a couple months ago where someone was vacationing, I feel like maybe in the Philippines, and they said they found a Survivor buff, and they like posted it on Instagram, and I believe it was a blue Mindanao buff. So,
yes,
do you have
heard
any,
about?
Yeah, do you have any knowledge as to who left it behind?
I can't remember the exact conversation, but I remember us discussing this in the WhatsApp group once. Someone had found it, and it was such a big deal because this was an emotional thing for that person who had traveled due to some. I can't. Do you know the story? I can't remember. I'm so upset.
I can't remember it either.
But it was very emotional. Like, this person went, like, they found this thing and they were going through a tough time or something. And this whole, it was like almost a very amazing story overall. It was something that everyone in the group was like, wow, amazing. We were all like, oh my God, I can't believe this. It was quite emotional. It was something very emotional, if I remember correctly.
Well, what an incredible moment to be part of in the WhatsApp group.
Yeah, it was, and it's, I can't remember. Someone did mention it could have been their buff, but I can't remember. I'm actually disappointed that I can't.
Well, if they need a new buff, Cape Union Mart might be the place they can find it, and that is information I'm delivering to you here in the Biostrath Variety Hour. I would describe their general tweets, though, Cape Union Mart, as like vague memes. They don't really seem to have a slogan. Like, I feel like they could be doing more than just, you know, retweeting Ace and also giving vague memes. But that brings us to the quiz for Biostrath. Firstly, Tevin, before we get into it, the reason you're here, what is Biostrath? What is it? What are we dealing with?
So, you know, when you ask a doctor questions like this, we're treading on fine lines because, you know, your colleagues are listening and you don't want to say anything. You don't want to support any brands. You don't want to associate yourself with, but because
Biostrath is more than a brand, it's like a way of life, I think.
It's like a way of life, it seems. Yeah, yeah. Look, it's not something I would personally use, but or prescribe as a doctor. But it's a supplement. So I'm not really, I don't know what to say without being rude or dramatic. So I'm not really sure what to say. But look, it's a good brand. It supports Survivor South Africa. I support Survivor South Africa. Therefore, by default, I love Biostrath. Let me just say that.
Yes, we all love Biostrath.
But yeah, it's a supplement. It's basically a supplement, and they provide different types of supplements, whether it's liquid
stamina,
form, whether it's for different variety of reasons, focusing. Yeah, it depends on, like, I don't know the physiology of how these pills work. I haven't done my research, so I'm not going to promote it as a doctor. This is something you should ask a contestant from Survivor who's not a doctor, so they can go free range, just give you everything they want, because I'm just biting my tongue with it. Everything I kind of want to say. So yeah, I'm not the right contestant for this question.
The only contestants we can ask are people who can give, like, no medical approval to Viastrax, which does make sense. But, like, honestly, I just wanted to know what it was. And I feel like now I'm even more confused.
It's just a supplement for... So if you're ever feeling down, tired, just the same way we used it on the island, I drank it because it was tasty and I needed something to drink. That was it. Everybody else had it because they felt it was going to help them. So I... went with that as well, but yeah, it's a supplement. Yeah, that's it. Really? In the sense that it will revitalize you.
Really getting to the point again in this podcast where Biostruff, I think, is overwhelming the content. But I do have the quiz, and we will do the quiz. So you guys, you know, on a system, don't collaborate, and you can just tell me which of these four Biostruff tweets you think is fake. Number one. Oh no, Jacques, with a little bit of Biostruff, you may have had the focus and stamina to play the idol correctly. Number two.
I don't know about that.
Number two, Nathan shoots right back as a new man. New her, don't cur. It's spelled HUURRC. It's hard. It's easy to read. This is another thing I can't pronounce.
So now, can you alternatively, like, you can spell swap SWOP Tevin in South Africa? Can you spell her HURRR in South Africa?
Nope. It's just a thing. You get no cur, don't cur. It's like air day, all day, air day.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things.
I'm like exceptionally too white to be able to have said that naturally. But anyway, so that was the second tweet. The third tweet, Rocco got moves, huh? Someone got all the energy and stamina this morning. And the fourth tweet, a cat with seven lives. Really, Corbus? Perhaps you need some Biostruff, which I also kind of love because it's like, what does Biostruff do? It reminds people how to say phrases correctly. Like, it has no bounds of what it can achieve.
That is the thing with advertising. Any brand says whatever they have to say to promote the brand. Yeah. It doesn't necessarily have to be backed up by anything. That's the thing with television. So the brand will say whatever they feel.
I believe that if Kubis had Biostruff, he would have been saying a cat with nine lives correctly. But which of these tweets, guys, do you think is fake?
Wait, what were the last two? Just to remind me.
The one, Rocco having energy and stamina for the dance, and then Corbus, the cat with seven lives. Wait.
I think the cat with seven lives, Corbus, because the other three sound like Biostruff tweeting.
So my thing is, I'm between one and four, because you had pointed out how with the new social media manager behind Biostruff, it's a little less shady, and I feel like one and four are the shadiest. I'm going to go with one here just to be a bit disparate from Tevin.
Mike, you're right. You know Biostruff. So you must have been drinking Biostruff to get it correct. Or eating it.
That's my secret. That's my secret, Shannon. I'm always drinking Biostruff.
I just based on Biostruff from last season. That was my only reference to go with.
All right. Well, at what point does this stop being cute? Is it already? Has it happened? I don't know. But on I continue with this obsession of mine. And the first question I have in our question segment is from Killian McNeely, who said, what just happened? Did Jacques forget to drink his daily Biostruff? And to that I say, that's a really good way to game the question segment to get on the podcast by mentioning Biostruff. So congratulations there. I won't answer it because I think we kind of passed it, but really, really smart question asking there. Okay. So Ivan Vrjoljak says, is Rocco the Chris Noble of Survivor SA?
That's a really good question because... I mean, yeah. I guess they sort of shared the same loose archetype, and it's what, like, big, meaty boy who has a little bit of, like, a funny side to him. But I feel like Chris Noble was made out much more to be a goof than Rocco was. I feel like we should not take, you know, the dance as... the dance is not on the same level as Chris Noble's frequent rapping and the all of his misproperly handled words and everything like that. So I would say he's on the path. He's on the noble path. I'll say that much.
See, I feel
what's
like
up with so many buff guys, though. I mean, I looked at this and it looked like a rugby team. That was the first thing I thought when I looked at the post. I was like, this is a huge batch of people. Like, even the woman, they're quite fit. Steffi looks like a beast. She looks like she could spear like a fully grown man to the ground. This is quite a fit cast.
Yeah.
Overall.
I think we thought it would be super physical, kind of like Australian Survivor Season 3, because it did look as physical as it was. And we saw now poor Ting Ting did go, because maybe she's, you know, not like a big, buff guy or girl. And like, that's annoying to me as well, because she was really good at the puzzles. So different types of strength. But I guess in this like hyper physical cast, it's not really being seen that way. And I do think as well with the Chris Noble comparison, like that seems offensive to Rocco. Firstly, would Chris Noble do that dance like so embarrassingly? I don't think so. And also Rocco is like, when Nico's congratulating him on the challenge, he's like, oh, it was my tribe was just cheering me on and giving them credit when they did literally nothing. So I feel like he's more humble than Chris Noble. Again, low bar. But he's more of a dork. That dance was so dorky. It was amazing. Chris Noble could never.
Wasn't Rocco the one in the beginning of episode one who said, I know I'm good looking, but that's not... Was it? I think he was him. Was it him?
Okay, well, some things are obvious. You know, sometimes you got to work with what you have.
Rocco is, but definitely, I think he's got a lot more to him, and he has a lot more to offer than Chris did in terms of the strategic side of the game.
But not in terms of rapping for what we have seen so far.
Not yet.
DJ LaBelle Klein had a really interesting question. He said, how many weeks does Tanya have to survive for it to have been worth sacrificing Ting Ting for her? And this is something I find really interesting, because Tanya is a big character. She could get taken to the end. She could just annoy them all so much that she doesn't survive a lot. Whereas Ting Ting was someone with a lot of winner potential, I think, with a lot of chops for the game, who could have gone really, really far and had success in the game, I think. Obviously, we're all happy to keep Tanya. She's like the breakout character of the season. But if Tanya goes in the next couple of weeks, like at what point is it just so annoying that she didn't just go here and we could have seen a really good run from Ting Ting? Mike?
That's always tough. You know, to be like, hey, why do we have to get rid of this person? You know, it's sort of like, again, not to offend our guests too much, but like, it stunk to get rid of Tevin that early, but it gave rise to peak chaos. And who knows, you know,
you what... made the what... example our guest. Like, Tevin, you're live in the game. What was it worth to me?
It contributed to the overall... So everyone has a place in the story of the season. And so, who knows? You know, it is interesting that you talked about, like, the division between big characters and people with winner potential, because Survivor South Africa has proved they can become one and the same within, you know, the final few weeks of the season. So I do say that, yeah, it sucks to lose Ting Ting right now, especially to such a crazy move. But for what it's worth, it's brought upon, you know, a bunch of discussion around it. Ting Ting seems to be in really good spirits. And yeah, it does think that she also went home basically because Tanya got kept around on iOS. But I feel like Tanya's going to wring a bunch of entertainment out of us. It's tough to say how much we'll compensate for it, but you know what? I'm ready to keep, you know, eating some Tanya screen time and remain satiated while sorely missing Ting Ting in the process.
Yeah. I mean, Tanya, who knows, for Survivor South Africa, she probably wins the whole damn game. Our last question is from Sheldon Cup, and for you, Tevin, kind of looking back into that Jacques superfan thing that was obviously the role that you have. And it said, how difficult is it to play with people who aren't big superfans, and how would you adapt your game to integrate with people who aren't as knowledgeable as you are?
I think it is a big factor, because people start to ask you questions directly about the game and they start learning the game from you, you know, because I know PK hadn't watched much of Survivor either. So when he got there, he became a big fan while on the island.
Yeah, I've been recommending seasons for him to binge.
Yeah, exactly. So they look at you for guidance, and it does become a problem, because you start to know what a big threat you're starting to become perceived as, because it was immediate that Varun and I knew too much about the game. And we were threats. So from day one, and even Jean, there are certain people who get picked out as big threats based on their knowledge on the game. So sometimes you want to keep it to yourself, but you obviously don't want your tribe to make mistakes because of something you could have told them that could have prevented that mistake from happening. So it's a difficult thing being a fan of the game and playing it. It does change your perspective of the game completely, though, once you play it. I know my mind about Survivor has changed so much. I love it still, and I really hope I could play it again if Survivor South Africa has a season for us to come back.
Yeah, because I know at one point during a tribal council, Tevin, I think you said that, like, when you watch the show, you have sympathy, and when you participate in it, you have empathy. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I said, yeah. It's because you sit there and you sort of start to realize that when you're at home watching the show, it's so much easier to say, just vote her off now. But when you're sitting there, you're kind of like, the easiest route is definitely to pick a batch of people you trust and take them with you for as long as possible. Because that's always the group I don't like. I don't like the group of six who stay together for too long. I love watching them get separated. I love watching them get broken up. But when I was there, I was almost like, if we get six, we've increased our odds from 1 in 18 to 1 in 6. No matter what, you know, it's one of those easy odds. And so you get complacent. That's what happened to me. I became too confident, too complacent within my tribe. And that's what I love about survivors, or any survivor, is that there's just no safe place. You're never safe.
Yeah, well, Tevin, I've said before that I'd be happy for them to just bring the entire cast back, replay the season, see how it goes. And I'm now even more invested in this now that I know that WhatsApp drama could be coming out as well. So who knows?
Oh, like, fantasy league, because now that's becoming a dramatic thing. It's almost like they're versing each other again. And I'm not a part of it because I don't have social media anymore. So I haven't seen this fantasy league. I don't know what's it about, but I see them competing now with about this fantasy league score. And I'm like, oh my God, are we back on the island, guys? Are people going to start leaving the group? What's going to happen next? I don't know. It's almost like you're getting voted off again by leaving the group.
Please keep me updated on the WhatsApp drama. Like, this is my favorite new reality show. The Survivor South African Philippines WhatsApp group.
It's definitely a version 2 of Survivor, because within the group, it's almost like there is some Survivor aspect coming back.
What is the name of the group? I feel like that is often a window into like the soul of what a WhatsApp group can be.
It's quite lame. I changed it just the other day. I made it Survivor South Africa Philippines. That's it. And then with like a fire.
It's really bad.
It's boring.
Yeah. I was hoping for something better than that. Maybe we can workshop. Okay, so people send in what the name of the group should be, because you can't have it just be Survivor South Africa Philippines. It's such a mouthful. We could do... What do you think, Mike? Any bad puns for what they should be doing with the title?
Oh, I mean, considering the reception I've gotten to them, I don't know if you want to hear them. Let's see. I don't know, like, Get Your Philippines could be an interesting one. Should it be like a reference to the season? Like, could you do like, I don't know, the Biostrath Believers might be a good one.
You almost know, like just name yourself like a Matthew baseball
Anus. team.
Matthew Anus.
Yeah, and then if he ever gets added back, he'll just immediately leave again. Like, how dare you?
So I can imagine like Werner's like poor wife looking at his phone and saying like, "You got a message from Matthew Anus." Like, what is going on here?
Okay, now you have to do it. Now that I've imagined that, you have to do it.
His husband as well, like just randomly, like, Annalise, what is that? Such a strange name. Now.
Everyone has a friend named Matthew Anus. Like, I please, Kevin, please, thank you for joining.
You know, that was so disappointing. Just not getting to write.
Or because of all the bus stuff, call yourselves Cool Bus, because you're the coolest season.
Cool Bus. You could do that.
Yeah, who built cool the Cool Bus?
We should just name it The Bus. That's it, The Bus.
There
you
we go, the Bus.
You're giving a lot of credit there. Like, I feel like that might go to his head if you just call, you know, name it The Bus. But, yeah, I mean, look, hey, definitely the hashtag for this podcast, if you made it this far, is hashtag Cool Bus. I feel like we can all agree on that. Tevin, you're not on social media at the moment, so I can't plug that. Is there anything you're doing that people should check out, or are you just going about your doctor life?
Nah, I'm just doctoring. It's too busy to have this double life. I've decided to give it a break. I'm just focusing on work.
If you want Tevin's alt account, it's at Foot Survivor. just send all your thoughts about Tevin to that, and they'll be sure to respond.
At Nathan Speedo, which is apparent, which probably exists by the time this is out.
Nathan Hare as well. That's going to be something.
Okay, Tevin, are you running these accounts?
That's the secret.
You should definitely make a good account of Ting Ting's reaction, her face. That was like so iconic. That's going to be a meme for a long time.
Like, I feel guilty if I don't follow these accounts. So, like, I don't want to have to, I don't want all the people I'm following to just be, you know, the body parts of surviving contestants. So I'm trying to squash what we're doing right now. But as well as following all of Nathan's body parts, you can obviously follow me at Shannon Gates for all your Survivor South Africa content, for question threads, for the podcast links, for everything like that. Always slide into my DMs for links. I tend to be helpful. You can follow Mike at @MikeBluntype. Mike, what do you have going on in the podcast world at the moment?
Amazing Race 31 is going strong. Had a really fun podcast with Rob Cesarino and Jessica Lease on the main feed, talking about all the drama that went down this week on the Amazing Race. So be sure to check that out. And yeah, this has been a really fun season so far. I'm very excited to see. I feel like Jacques is going to recover from what even I think even he would say was a very, very bad move. And I am excited to see where he goes from here, where the swap goes from here, because from the coming attractions, I don't think we saw anything about who was ending up where. And knowing that Tanya has all the power to choose where she goes to, it's going to make for a very fun swap no matter what.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it with you, Mike. Just the two of us back again. The Jacques and Ting Ting original next week, which will be fun.
Guys, I have something so to tell you right now. So Tony just sent a message into the group of a photo of Ace, Ting Ting, and herself. And she said, new alliance.
Ooh!
Was she also like, why is the group now called Matthew Anus? What did you do?
You know, it was so funny. When Ting Ting got voted off, we were all discussing what would we have written on the page. So I was like, ain't nothing but a Ting. Some people was like, you did some Ting Wong. Because her name's Ting Wong.
Well, because Meryl wrote down like the Ting goes parentheses me, which I'm very confused by. I don't know if she's like, I don't know if it was pun filled or an inside joke or something. But yeah, it seems like she was on the same note as you guys of like, let's make it into a phrase or something.
The group can also make a group decision for us on whether it's Jeffrey or Joffrey. It's definitely Jeffrey, by the way. Like, there's no question. But I'd be interested to know from the WhatsApp group from Survivor South Africa Philippines is like our new council. They're our new Supreme Court. Any decisions that have to be made, like if I'd known last week, I would have been going straight to that group with the Chile decision. But now it is done. Also, just a quick note, in honesty, there is no exit interview in this podcast, as you'll notice, even though we announced it last week. It's been tough with Mnet. We thought we were going to get them. Then we heard no one was getting them, which isn't true. There are international outlets also getting exit interviews. We're working really hard on it. It's definitely not for lack of trying. It's quite upsetting. Actually, I will say that, look, Mnet have upset me more this week than a faceless corporation should be able to upset a human being, because I really want to do the exit interviews. I really want to talk to the cast. I really wanted to talk to Ting Ting, who also wanted to talk to us and meet this person who's meant to be my avatar and thank her for following my cat. But it was not to be. If we can get it done within the next week, we can attach it to next week's podcast. So who knows? Crossing my fingers. But yeah, it's been tough. And that's transparently where we're at with that.
I'm so sorry. I don't know what to say about that.
Okay, yeah, no, it was painful. I don't know why we're ending on this painful thing. Let's talk about the WhatsApp group again.
Yeah, no, they're having fun, the three of them. Ting Ting, Ace, and Tony. New alliance.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for being our guest. Thank you for telling us about Biostrath from a medical standpoint. Thank you for giving us the insights into the game and how to pronounce the names as well. It was great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm a big fan, guys. Thanks for everything you do. You know, I thought I was a super fan until I saw you guys. You guys are definitely much bigger than I am. So you make me feel bad about my Survivor fanhood. So I'm really sad about that.
Rob told us last week we have no life.
Yeah, this is the second week in a row that our guest has called us out on being like big Survivor dork. So
Rob pulled you guys out last week and it's my turn. I mean, I'm a huge fan, but you guys just take it to the next level.
Yeah.
So next week, Shannon, since it's just you and I, we're going to have to like say that in the mirror to each other, right?
Yeah, we'll get on the podcast, and as well as insulting your puns, I'll be like, Mike, what are we doing? What are we doing with our lives in this moment?
Whenever you're down, just consult the bus.
Just consult the bus. Ugh, I love it. That's another hashtag in and of itself. But anyway, we'll end it like we usually do every week. Mike and I are sad people, and that's where the podcast goes every week now. But so follow the reality TV wrap-ups feed as usual. Follow the International Survivor wrap-ups feed, and you'll never miss a podcast. Thank you so much again, Tevin. Mike, my co-host, my Jacques, thank you as always. And to Scott St. Pierre as well, thank you behind the scenes. And we will see you to talk about episode 4 next week. Bye!
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
Laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.